Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. You have a loved one with cancer and you wait with anticipation for the next big advance in cancer treatment. And if you live far away from hospitals with access to those latest advancements, you agonize over decisions about travel and expense, risk, and potential benefit. So today we talk about advances in cancer care right here at home, including cellular therapy. Dr. Casey Williams is Chief Scientific Officer and Executive Director of Cancer Research at Avera, and he's joining us in the Kirby Family Studio for today's innovation to talk about research breakthroughs and the importance of healthcare expertise and infrastructure in South Dakota. Dr. Williams, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
It seems like the advances in, we want advances in cancer care to come fast. And lately it seems like in some ways they really are. Never fast enough if you have somebody who is suffering. Tell us a little bit though about what some of these advancements in cancer care have been in the last couple of years and how they connect with Avera's research and cancer treatment.
Oh, loaded question.
It's a big one, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Well, on the research side, along with our clinical programs, there's been a lot of things that have been happening at Avera across the country, quite frankly. Immunotherapy is the buzzword for many people. Cellular therapy is coming to a center near you. I mean, we're very blessed at Avera to have the mission and vision that we have. And starting with the cellular therapy program, we've had a stem cell transplant program at Avera for many years and have the fortune of having three wonderful hematologists and hopefully a fourth one coming. And so we have the ability to offer services in the cellular therapy and stem cell transplant space that very few in our area do. And because of that, we can offer some of the cutting-edge clinical trials in this area. And one of them, a study with head and neck cancer, is ongoing at Avera right now and looking to continue to add to that number in the future.
All right, so let's help people understand, as some of these are new, immunotherapy, cellular therapy. What exactly, how do you describe what immunotherapy is?
Yeah, so a lot of the therapies that people have been getting for several years now and the ones that you see on TV with the commercials, those therapies predominantly are focused on taking the brakes off your immune system. And what I mean by that is if you are one that has cancer or have developed cancer in the past, your immune system is fighting it all the time. And one of the therapies and several of the therapies in clinical trials right now, and there's thousands of clinical trials looking at different therapies in the immunotherapy space, these are generally treatments that unleash the immune system that you already have to work better. Ideally, they work in everyone, and unfortunately, they do not. But we're trying to figure out who is going to best respond to some of those treatments and gain the best treatment outcome. The cellular therapy side, now that's where we take cells from you or from someone else, and do something to them in the laboratory, make them recognize either the tumor if it's your cells, take out the tumor from your body, grow it up in the laboratory, and then give it back to you with some of those tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes or T cells that will hopefully help kill the cancer.
What's the difference between a T cell and a stem cell?
So the stem cell, we're born with, stem cells from that help generate the rest of our cells. They're called pluripotent stem cells. Those are, a hot buzzword in the research field too. Fetal stem cells.
Right.
Those are already committed cells. What I'm talking about here on stem cells. Those are able to make most any of the rest of the cells in your body, particularly the blood cells or the hematopoietic cells that make platelets, red blood cells, and white cells.
All right, so go back to immunotherapy because I have a general idea with cellular therapy. You remove something, you what, genetically modify it?
Basically in the accurate? Cellular therapy study that I'm talking about with head and neck cancer, and this same mechanism is going to be used for diseases like melanoma, and cervical cancer and several other things under development.
Okay.
But in the head and neck cancer study, we actually take a chunk of the tumor out, take it to the laboratory, take the T cells out of it, which are the cells that are trying to kill the cancer by themselves, probably not winning the battle, but we take those T cells or tumor infiltrating lymphocytes, we take them out, inject something called interleukin-2, help them grow in the laboratory, grow them up to a high enough number that we feel like is satisfactory to work, and then we inject them back into the patient. So they're your own lymphocytes that are already programmed by you to kill the cancer cells in you. They're just not enough of them. And so we take them out, grow them in the laboratory, and then give them back.
So when we think of things like chemotherapy, we think of a really intense process. It's a difficult thing for a patient to go through. Is this clinical trial that we're talking about with head and neck cancer, is that also, I mean, you've taken a tumor out. That seems fairly straightforward, depending on the tumor, and putting the modified right back in. Is that a high-risk procedure for the patient?
So there's still chemotherapy involved, and a lot of the different types of cellular therapy that we're talking about, patients still require some kind of treatment to stun the immune system, ways to reduce its potency so that they don't kill these new cells coming back.
Okay.
So your immune system would likely attack some of these cells coming in. So what we want to do is blunt the immune response, so to speak, of these of your current immune system. Let the new cells come in. It's like a mini stem cell transplant preparative regimen, where we give you therapies that would reduce the ability to fight back right away.
Right.
Let the new cells come in and fight the cancer, and then let the immune system regenerate itself.
So where are we at in these clinical trials? Like, how long do they go on, and what is sort of the process and reporting look like from a Vera standpoint, and then let's talk about it from the patient standpoint.
Yeah, these stem cell or cellular therapy trials have been on for a while, but we're getting our first patient. I think we've enrolled our first patient. It's still available for other patients to enroll. And it takes a while for this to work. We have to take out the tumor, a surgeon has to do that, and then we have to take it to the laboratory, which in this case is the company that's sponsoring the treatment. Then that takes a few weeks to work. Then we get it back, and then we have to do the treatment to suppress the immune system of the patient, and then we inject them. So it's several weeks for this whole process to occur. And that's just one patient.
Really? Mm-hmm. We always say in my family, this is so fascinating unless it's happening to you. That's
right.
Been kind of our mantra as my brother goes through his cancer treatment is, that is so interesting. I just wish it was not something that, you know, we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. So go back to immunotherapy, because I still don't really understand how that works differently.
So immunotherapy is actually the therapy itself. It's the drug.
Okay.
Which is not the cellular therapy that I mentioned.
Right.
So we're basically giving you a drug that removes the immune system's brakes. And so what I mean by that is that all of us, hopefully, have a fairly robust immune system. But when our immune system starts to attack something, that's an infection or that's a foreign body or something in our body that shouldn't be there, that they don't like, the immune system doesn't like, it mounts an immune response. And you know all of that because you get a fever and you have many other side effects and inflammation or swelling and, it's hot to the touch, etc. If that was able to go on without being abated, it could potentially kill you. And so that's what happens in patients that have sepsis and unfortunately pass away from sepsis and other things. Your immune system ultimately isn't able to either A, kill the infection quickly enough, or your immune system overwhelms you,
right,
and it ultimately lends to you not surviving the event. That could happen often. If we even get a scratch, our immune system could grow and go out of control and ultimately lead to something bad. Well, what we do in cancer, in those cases, our immune system has brakes.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work all the time, and it doesn't work fully because we aren't allowing it to. It breaks itself. We're trying to take away some of those breaks to allow the immune system to work more aggressively than it normally would, because there's other places or other settings in our body that basically stop it from working out of control.
Hmm. How does all, you know, when we think about the sort of the cancer care that most of us have had some kind of experience with, a radiation or a chemotherapy, and now these new immunotherapy and cellular therapy and CAR T treatment, and I'm wondering, you know, how does the interdisciplinary work? How does the team work? There must be a huge team of physicians trying to figure out, you know, how do we balance what we know, what we are trying to learn, and this individual patient's story, which is going to be different based on underlying health. I mean, every patient that comes in is different, no matter if they have the same name of cancer.
You're exactly right. It takes a village. It's a multidisciplinary approach. I mean, I'm a pharmacist by training, and so I'm an oncology pharmacist where I'm really involved in collaborating very closely with nursing, with obviously the physicians, with our bench researchers, our translational scientists, our social workers, you name it. We all work as a big team. We each have our own expertise area, and it takes all of our talents and abilities to take care of everyone that's, you know, comes through our door. And that's really an important aspect of cancer care, but all medicine these days, quite frankly.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about building that infrastructure, because some people have to travel. I mean, if you know that this treatment exists, then you are making decisions about how far you're willing to travel to get that treatment. As Avera builds up infrastructure, what's the value of that to South Dakota patients then?
Well, obviously, there's multiple centers within the Avera footprint. I think that the critical component is having access to care close to home that you trust, that is able to provide the type of care and service and mission and everything else that we stand for to deliver the kind of care and service that you'd expect. Obviously, some of these clinical trials I'm mentioning can't be offered at every center. They have to be offered at a center that has the expertise and the infrastructure like you describe. So I think here in Sioux Falls, we have the luxury, I guess, of having the biggest city and the infrastructure that supports that. But the intention is certainly still to offer as many opportunities for treatment for patients throughout the system.
Mm-hmm. What are some other research areas or areas of advancement that you're excited about, that you're sort of thinking, yeah, 50 years from now, we might have done this?
Yeah, well, the other area that you've probably heard before is genomics or molecular testing, and that's still obviously a cutting-edge science, but we're learning so much more about it as we go. Avera's been doing cancer genomics now for about 7-8 years. Definitely accumulated a lot of data and a lot of experience with different patients and different cases that we've seen. It's interesting to see where it's going. It's becoming much more common to do molecular testing up front, so a newly diagnosed person, or even for screening. We're actually developing clinical trials to look at collecting blood from patients even before they become patients.
Interesting.
To see if we could detect things before they would otherwise be detected in other means. So early testing, early screening, prevention, different ways to do it so that we catch the cancer if it ever develops very early and we can make the biggest and best impact.
Is there a potential impact for machine learning and artificial intelligence? How is that being incorporated now in medical research? And what's the potential for really expanding that?
Yeah, artificial intelligence would be a long discussion. I prescribe to the idea that artificial intelligence will be a big benefit to us. I'm not sure exactly how yet. I know it's coming. I definitely think we can teach machines to do tasks that are repetitive. I'm very confident we can get machines to do things that you know, maybe the human eye isn't able to detect every time, and we can use machines and other things to improve our ability. But I think having things that are accessible to people, making me as a patient, I'm a patient just as much as I'm a provider of healthcare. And so, you know, it's important that I have access, or all of us have access to ways to better educate ourselves, to learn about different techniques that are happening, and to also keep ourselves healthy. Artificial intelligence, I think, is definitely going to improve prevention and population health. We forget about the best treatment is actually not getting it,
right,
and doing things to eliminate some of our probably worse habits or lesser habits, improving some of the things we can do to keep ourselves healthy is
definitely a big piece. So using artificial intelligence to sort of help modify human behavior.
Correct.
In a really positive way.
Yes.
Ooh, let's do another segment on that.
Love to.
Dr. Casey Williams, thank you so much for being here with us, and you are invited back, so we'll talk just about that.
Love to. Thanks for having me.